Well, hello and welcome to another live edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I'm Michael Hook, your host. Glad to have you with us today on the Arts Magazine Show as you listen here on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio station. Several interesting shows to talk about today. Oh, my, my, my. A little exotic in the first half hour of the show, but we're gonna travel over to Asia and then go back to Great Britain. Mm-hmm. And it's really... it's very exciting. The Kansas City Repertory Theater is producing their show, Roof of the World, directed by Eric Rosen, and two of the actresses in the show, the lead actress and one of the character actresses in the show, are with us today. Anjali Bimani.
Oh, so close. That was amazing. You were so close.
That was very close.
That was really close. Anjali Bimani.
Bimani.
Yes.
Okay.
But and, hey, that was awesome.
Oh, that's play the role of, here we go. Safiya? Safiya?
Safiya.
Safiya? Well, okay, I'm close. I heard the whole thing during the show. It seemed, at times, it seemed like the actors were saying it differently, but probably not.
Well, there were a couple of moments where, for effect, they were, because, again, she's an exotic character that no one knows anything about.
She is.
So people were mispronouncing her name at certain moments, so you did catch that. She does.
Very mysterious. Very mysterious. Set in the time of the British, I guess. Were the British occupying India?
Yeah, it's during the time of the British Raj, and the British occupied India, among many other places in the world during the time. It was the time of the British Empire, when they were basically seeking to conquer the world. You know, the British Empire was huge, and British rule in India lasted a very long time, and it was a very long period of subjugation for the Indian people as well. So although it's been romanticized in a lot of literature, it's also really important, and especially in this play, you see the flip side of that, how racism and subjugation and all of those themes were actually part of the life of the Indian people during the British Raj as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're a spy. It's kind of a mystery, an adventure,
and
a spy story,
and
at the
a
same
love
time.
Story at the core of it.
Oh,
which
and
is,
a love story.
Well, yeah.
Being a male, you see where I go right to. But a love story.
Well, it's something
as well.
For everyone, though, and that's right. And that's honestly when Dee Tucker Smith wrote the play, she very much wanted to write something that felt like, you know, she describes it as a good yarn, a really good. She wanted people to feel like they're sitting down by the fireplace with a snifter of brandy and a really good adventure book, that they're stepping into that world. And so she's created a world that is full of adventure and intrigue and love and politics and socioeconomical things. I mean, it's a very full story. So I do feel like there's something for everyone in that way.
Oh, sure. Well, you have a lot of experience, obviously, on Broadway, off Broadway as well, the Manhattan Theater Club. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to pick and choose here. Second Stage Theater, regionally, the Goodman Theater, the Huntington Theater, the Kirk Douglas Theater, I guess I read Goodman already, MacArthur Theater, Seattle Repertory Theater, the Looking Glass Theater, Berkeley Repertory Theater, Seattle Repertory Theater, the Mark Taper Forum, among others as well. Mm-hmm. Lots of experience also on film and TV. You'll recognize some of these Modern Family. There's a lot of fans of that here in town, because one of the actors is from this area, as you know. Silicon Valley, Criminal Minds, Beyond Borders, Criminal Minds in NCIS, LA, The Fosters, Law and Order. Yeah, a lot of the actors from New York have been on that show.
Yes, yes. It's a great employer of actors in New York City. We're big fans.
Yeah. Now, this is easier for me. Brie Elrod.
Yep.
You nailed it.
Nailed it.
She plays the role of Prue.
That's right.
Thanks for making it so easy for me. You have some pretty good credits as well. The Heart of America Shakespeare Festival here in town.
Mm-hmm.
Off-Broadway for you as well. The Kirk Theater. Then regionally, the Two River Theater. Mm-hmm. The Huntington Theater. I don't suppose you were there at the same time.
No, we were not. No, unfortunately.
Boston ACT, San Francisco. Malibu Theater. They have a theater in Malibu.
They do, surprisingly. I don't know if it's there anymore. But
amongst all the movie stars.
Yeah, it's just movie stars.
Cool. Cool. NYU, done performances there. In film, Shutter Island, directed by Scorsese.
That's right. Yeah.
Was he a difficult director?
No, he was wonderful. Yeah, I call him Marty.
Well,
yeah,
good for you.
We're friends. We're chums.
We're like that.
We're like that. Yeah.
New York's 52nd Street Project, among other things. So both of you are very very well schooled in the acting arts as well.
We've been around.
A story. This is a story of British aristocracy and the intrigue, as you mentioned, of Asia, especially India and all of that. But you have, boy, you have it difficult. You do a lot of moving. You have night fights. You have swinging around the stage. Is Errol Flynn somewhere in your bloodline?
No, but I will say that I really do enjoy physicality in theater, in live performance. All of my favorite shows that I've ever worked on, there has been some aspect of physicalizing that is maybe less than realistic, you know, something that makes things transcend just those words. So whether it's dance or very physical theater, I've been really lucky to work with a lot of directors who imbue their shows with a lot of movement that enables the audience to have a more visceral reaction to things than necessarily just hearing people standing around talking. And I'm really lucky to do that. I find it a little easier for me. Every actor has a different process. I know Brie can weigh in on this too. I find it a little bit easier to go from the outside in and to figure out the physicality of a character first, whether it's how they walk or how they swing across a rope in show, or whatever, you know, whatever it is that they need to do with their bodies, and then to figure out the internal life of that character, partly based on what you might see on the outside or how they might move. I find that is really intriguing to work with.
Well, for her, it seemed to be a question of survival.
Absolutely.
Well, and it was interesting because we did the table work for the first week where the actors just sit around the table and read through the play, and we kind of were adjusting things, and we were with the playwright, which is a very unique experience that the Kin City Rep is promoting this new work, and it was really exciting, but it really was getting on its feet. That was really, you know, and Anj was just like from the start, just in it, you know, just trying to physicalize, like she said, and it's been really fun to watch. And then when we finally got onto the stage, just, you know, seeing her like from day one scramble up the set, the box, it's like, oh my, she's like, oh, I got this, I'll do it, you know. And it's just, she's been game from day one, so it's been fun to watch that.
Yeah, she's been up on the roof, yeah, she's swinging around. And
what's also really great though about, while we talk about the physicality of this play, is that because a large part of it is set in Victorian England, there is the contrast between the very open and sort of feral physicality of this character, of Safia, versus the repression you know, the compression of the people who are living in Victorian England. Brie's character, Prue, is someone who is very, you know, she's very held back by the rules for women at the time, the society, you know, the societal rules at the time. But at the same time, you can totally see that if she had her druthers, she'd be out there with Safia.
Oh, yeah. And there are moments where Safia has these primal screams, and I feel like that's going on inside of Prue, that Prue can't exactly express it in that way, but underneath the Victorian etiquette and everything, there's a lot moving around. And so it's just interesting to see the two characters moving through their own worlds, but then coming together.
And then the two worlds specifically, again, because Dee very much wanted there to be this dichotomy of compression versus vast open spaces. The character of George, played by Rusty Sneary, has you know, he came from England, but he lives out there in the wilderness like Safia does. He's out there. So you see that duality in that person. And it's, you know, Eric has staged it in such a beautiful way that you, even physically watching the set, you know, there is a box on stage, and without giving away too much of what that box does, it sort of represents anything. And there are moments that are in the box and feel very compressed, and there are moments that are outside the box and feel huge. And so, again, the visual aspect of the show and the physicality of the show is as much a part of it as Dee's very beautiful and specific words. She's given us some gorgeous language for these characters to say, to describe their experiences, and it's just, it's a special thing.
Oh, sure. Some of them, as people talked in the audience, especially at intermission, they seemed to be confused at where Roof of the World was.
Sure. Well, the Roof of the World specifically describes the Bami Dunya, which is an area which is modern-day Central Asia, essentially. It's there in what is known as the Himalayas, not the Great Himalaya, because that's one mountain range, but essentially the Himalayas, and the Pamirs, the Pamir Mountains, which we talk about a lot in the play. And it was a very important region during this time because Russia and England were sort of in this unspoken race to map that territory. And much like we see in today's day and age, it was sort of like the Cold War back then, that they were both thinking that the other one was going to map it first and then come and invade India, or map it first and come and invade China. Everybody, the hype was so big about the dangers of what would happen if either England did it first or Russia did it first, that they were trying so hard to explore this territory, which is basically at the core of the conflict in our play, is that someone wants to go there and it's incredibly dangerous and someone else doesn't want him to go there.
Sure.
Again, trying not to give it all away. But so the Pamir Mountains, Bami Dunya, the roof of the world, but also the roof of the world means something obviously symbolic for different people. And that's one of the reasons why Dee chose it as the title for the show.
Without giving too much away, your character then goes to Victorian England for assistance.
She does, for assistance.
And she meets this family of the man she loves.
Mm-hmm.
And for instance, Bree plays Prue from this Victorian era family. Straight-laced in many ways, but your character seems to have questions about that.
Yeah, she's a bit of a forward thinker. She's progressive. She, always, she works at a home for people who need help and people who are on the streets and women. And I think she really tries to find her own way and feels very trapped in the world. But you can see things are changing. And as much as the rest of the family, except for Martin, is trying to hold on to the past, she is trying to break free from that. And meeting Safia kind of ignites something within her. And, you know, again, talking about roof of the world, that being on the roof of the world, there's an exposure. And I feel like a lot of the characters, all the characters, go through things that they're exposing sides of themselves that they didn't know that they had. And so when you're on the roof of the world, you're just exposed. And I feel like that's kind of where she is and where Prue is living and finding her way through.
Your family didn't have the greatest reception.
No, you know, they're just traditional people. They're not used to Safia, people coming in, and they don't really know how to handle it. And I think, you know, that's what's interesting about this play is that, you know, it speaks to racism that is still very prevalent in our society now. And, you know, it's like you can kind of laugh at, oh, my God, I can't believe they would treat her that way. But then, you know, there are things happening in our world right now that I say those things like, I can't believe these people are being treated. You know, so it's it does, you know, and I feel like Prue is kind of trying to be the voice that I hope that most people who are watching it are thinking, well, God, why don't
identify with?
Yeah, identify with her, because I think she really wants to. But she, you know, she has a conflict in that she loves George. Prue kind of thought that maybe George would come back and they would get married. So there is a bit of conflict in her, because as much as she wants to be open and inviting, just her inner heart is tied up in George. So it's hard to receive someone who is now, you know, the love of George's life when Prue really wanted that.
And each character in this show, much like in most well-written drama, each character in this show has quite a journey. And that journey ends up getting set off. In this play, the arrival of Safia in London sort of sets off the action of the play, but each character has their own journey that that they go on because of that. Mm-hmm. Whether it is learning to accept, whether it is facing things about themselves that they didn't like, you know, the George and Safia, the love story that we see that's completely separate from that. George changes her, she changes George. So it at its core, it really is, Dee has also said this many times, at its core, every one of these characters is acting somehow in their self-interest, because even being in love is in our self-interest, right? But those changes that happen usually are happening because someone is trying to preserve something or find something within themselves. Mm-hmm. And that I think all of us can identify with that. Yeah. I think there's, even if you are not a swashbuckling Indian female, there is someone in this show that you can identify with. There is some character where you could say, I could totally see how I would say that, or I could totally, hopefully not Edward, but hopefully not. But there is something for everyone to grab onto and
yeah,
I really
all those
love that.
Sides are in us, you know, and that's
absolutely.
What's, you know, even the dark sides of Edward that you're, you know, that are so, sometimes hard to watch, that's all within us. So it's just what you activate, what you choose to act on, you know, if you know, good versus evil, what do you feed? What's the dog you feed? So
true. The costumes, both in India and in London, were just fantastic.
Yeah.
Gregory Gale, man.
The whole costume shop at KC.
The designs are gorgeous and the execution is mind blowing. I mean, this is my first time working in Kansas City, and I mean, it's not to say that I doubted that there would be such talent here, but I had no idea how amazing this costume shop and this set shop. They just whipped all of this stuff together. Some of the most complex creations that I've ever worked with, including on Broadway. They just whipped them together, and here we are doing giant costume changes in 30 to 45 seconds.
Anjali has several amazingly quick costume changes, and the way that they have rigged these beautiful dresses that look like they take hours to put on, and she puts it on and... I mean,
well, with the help of extraordinary dressers. We need to say none of us would get on stage with all of the things that we need. Like, none of us would make it through this show without the amazing crew that we have.
Yeah,
there is amazing a show going on backstage as there is going on stage.
They're actually going to be doing a GoPro. The crew is going to be wearing, some of them are going to be wearing GoPros to show exactly what they are doing behind the scenes that makes it work on stage. Because some of the transitions are some of the most amazing things I've ever seen, where they are holding furniture, walking on a turntable in the dark in order to set it on a spike so that all of a sudden then we all walk onto a moving turntable and then we're just in moving into light. I mean, it is incredible.
Yeah,
it
I really feel like,
is amazing.
I feel like my job is way easier than theirs.
No, trust me.
I noticed in one scene Mark Robbins stepped on and off of the rotating just the right time.
We had a nice long tech rehearsal, about a week and a half, getting to know the set. You know, you move from the rehearsal room where you've worked on all of the acting and the deepening of the life of the characters, and then you get on the set and everything goes out the window because you're learning how to operate on this set with these costumes.
That turntable really added a whole another level to our...
And the box.
Yeah. I mean, I have a transition too where I'm in a full Victorian dress, and if I do not walk swiftly enough, I will be hit by a wall. So I have to time it perfectly so that I can hustle across. Oh, hustle. Speaking of hustle.
Uh-oh.
We're
making it interesting for the audience.
Yes.
Of course.
Exactly. So
anything
we do,
could happen. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Anything could happen.
It has happened.
We've had already in the last week, we've had some very intriguing backstage antics. The crew is magnificent. And the entire company over at Kansas City Rep, I'm incredibly grateful to them and incredibly in awe of them for what they've been able to achieve with a new play in such a short time.
Let's talk about some of the others in the show. We've mentioned a few of them. Local people, Mark Robbins, as I said, right. Vanessa Severo.
So she has a lot on her plate, changing.
Yeah, no kidding.
Three different characters, and
And that's also an aspect of the play that we haven't talked about, is that one of the characters she plays is also a very intriguing character, and you don't find out actually who she is until the end of the play. But we don't just leap from Victorian England to the mountains of the Himalayas, we also leap forward into the 1960s, when the character of George Hayward, like I said, played by Rusty Sneary, is actually based on a real explorer, George Hayward, and his paintings in the 60s were auctioned off. They were found in a Bombay bazaar and auctioned off at Sotheby's. And so Dee, our playwright, was inspired to create this other story, this other frame of the story based on that. So, and Vanessa is the person who is executing that side of the story. So there's an added layer of that.
Everyone's wonderful. Yeah. Brent Harris and Derry Lawrence, they're from New York, and they're wonderful, and they've brought such a richness to their performances. Matt Lindblom, And it's just, it's been,
Jason
Chanos. Delightful. Yes.
Yes.
And those are based on real people. Yes. Jason's character.
Jason's character, Robert Shaw, and Mark's character, Sir Henry Rawlinson, and then George Hayward, were all three actual players in The Great Game. And you can read about them. The book that Dee was reading when she was inspired to write this play is actually called The Great Game, and it's by Peter Hopkirk, and it's an amazing historical, it's huge. But it reads like a novel. And anyone who's interested in learning more about that period and about the race for the two empires to map Central Asia, that's the book to go to.
Oh, sure. You've been involved with this for a long time. Now, you've worked other than this. I mean, you've worked at many places along the way. Yeah. But you always stuck with this. Did you wonder at times, is this ever going to happen?
No, because like Safia, I was like, I don't care how it's going to happen, it's going to happen. And amazingly, you know, Dee and I have built a tremendous friendship over the time that we've worked on this play. But there's also been, we've had a lot of, you know, ups and downs, and the journey of the show has been as adventurous as the show itself. But what has been so beautiful with this production is that everything really fell into place, the right people at the right time. Eric Rosen is an old friend of mine from college. And when he read the play, and our producer, Jana Robbins, contacted him as well, and everything came together in such a perfect way that now it feels like, almost like we weren't waiting, we were working and working and working, but now we realize that this is the absolute right time, because all of the pieces fell into place.
And with hostilities in Afghanistan today.
Oh, sure. Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the parallels to the story are ridiculous. When she first wrote it, the parallels were still there, you know? And so it's a little bit sad because history seems to just repeat itself. Right. But, it's very clear. There are some very specific lines in the play where it hits you pretty hard about how this is still at work today.
Yeah, story of East meets West. I guess I can call it that.
Sure.
It sort of is. Yeah. Is it considered West? I guess.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Western Europe.
In Roof of the World, it will run through March the 27th. Now, it's not on the campus this time. It's at the Copacan Stage downtown, which is in the H&R Block Center, 13th and Walnut. If you MapQuest things, you need the zip code for that area, 64105. The number to call, 816-235-2700, or you can make your arrangements online at kcrep.org through March the 27th, basically a Tuesday through Sunday run.
Mm-hmm.
Matinees on Saturday sometimes.
Variety of days. Saturdays and Sundays, I think, mostly.
Yeah, that's a heavy schedule, especially for as physical as your role is.
That's all right. I'm going to do this show if there's a bone sticking out of my leg. I don't care. I had too much fun doing it. I'll just wrap it up with duct tape.
She does have injuries, like, every night.
No one needs an ass. I'm like, whatever. That's all right.
She's tough.
Par for the course.
Is this the most physically demanding role you've ever
had? Surprisingly enough, it is not.
Okay.
So I am game. Every now and then we're on stage doing something, and I'm like, I wonder how we can make this more dangerous.
She has knee pads.
What can we do? What can we do? I do, thank God, have knee pads. I learned that lesson early on. I learned that lesson when my knees were not happy.
Oh,
but,
really?
Yeah, no, the more we do physical stuff in this show, the happier I am. It helps get to the heart of it too.
Don't want to give things away, but any knife training? Any special?
Any knife training?
Yeah,
I live on the streets. It's a rough life. No,
she does live in LA.
I do live in LA, man. A girl's got to protect herself. A girl's got to protect herself. No, I mean, I feel like we do. When you prep for a role, you sort of decide what things you want to prep for. Part of prepping for this show really is just getting our energy up. I mean, Brie and I even, when we're in the dressing room before the show, we have a dance party. That's
we
how
do.
We prep for the show.
We do.
So we call it the Bustle Hustle.
Yeah.
So we just get down, make
we
a few
do.
Music videos, call
it, really
it a day.
It helps us kind of get into, you know, especially if we have two shows during the day.
Yeah,
it gets us
exactly.
Where we need to be.
Yeah, but no, I'm not wielding my knife too much off stage these days. I'm trying to temper that
keep
activity.
It on stage.
Keep it on stage. Keep the drama
keep
on
the
stage.
Drama on stage.
Exactly. Exactly.
We'll run through March the 27th. Again, the Copacan Stage. They have a theater on campus. They have a theater downtown that they use. This is the one downtown. In the H&R Block building. It's at 13th and Walnut. Again, the number to call for more information, 816-235-2700, or online. And you can make your arrangements online if you so choose. kcrep.org to get in with the race to map
Central Asia.
Central mm-hmm. Asia, yes, between the Russians and the British. And, mm-hmm. and then here, the Afghans and the Indians are here in the middle.
Yeah, pretty much, and nobody wants them in there, so it would be nice. Not nobody wants the Afghans in there. I'm saying nobody wants the, you know, everybody. It's the same thing today as, you know, if we leave that region alone, let it do its own thing. But then again, I'm getting into social politics. I gotta stop. I'm gonna start getting into politics there. Nobody likes that.
Oh, well, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Anjali Bimani.
Bimani.
Who plays the role of Sophia, and Bree Elrod. On a day like today, I'm glad you have such an easy...
Oh, you're welcome.
In the Kansas City Repertory Theater production of Roof of the World, I hope you understand now what you're going to be seeing when you go. Running through March the 27th on the Copacan stage, downtown, but a production of the Kansas City Repertory Theater. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Take care of yourself, Tara.
Oh, I always do.
She does.
We're going to take a break now. When we return, we're going to talk to some folks from the Lyric Opera, The Elixir of Love. Has anyone ever tried to sell you a fake love potion?
No.
We'll find out all about that when we return. You're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI. 90.1 FM. And welcome back to the Arts Magazine show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hogue, your host, part of the Arts lineup here on KKFI. We have Arts Magazine, noon on Monday. We have Art Speak Radio, noon on Wednesday. Sometimes Charles Ferrugia on his program on Friday at noon. We'll kick in with guests from the arts community and various other programmers like Mark Manning, but others will also provide guests from the arts community as well. So it's all part of the arts lineup as we try to cover the art scene as best we can. It's hard. There's a lot going on here in the Kansas City area, right here on KKFI 90.1 FM. I'm going to talk with some people now from the Lyric Opera. They have a show that will be opening this Saturday, the 12th of March at 7:30 p.m. It's called The Elixir of Love. Mm-hmm. I just like to say that. It's a lot of fun for me to say it. A quack doctor, as best I remember, a quack doctor sells a love potion.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Or what he parades as a love potion.
Well, you know, border goes a long way.
That's right. A boy, a girl, and a love potion.
Exactly.
It's kind of a story you can get from that. A pretty good one, actually.
Yeah.
Ashley Weed is with us. She is a soprano. She is a crossover artist. This is what they wrote here.
Yes. Actually,
a crossover artist based out of Kansas City, opera, musical theater, and puppetry as well. Yeah, the Winter Opera in St. Louis, the Chicago Chamber Orchestra, here at the Lyric Theater, the Heartland Opera, and the Stone Lion Puppet Company right here in Kansas City. I've interviewed them, Heather.
I've interviewed them
in the past. They've been on a few times as well. And the Dubai International Puppet Festival.
Yeah. Stone Lion was the first company that took me overseas, actually. So Patrick can tell you all about his overseas travel with the opera, but mine is with puppets.
Puppets tell a story on themselves. Patrick Carfizi.
Carfizi
is with us as well. He is a bass baritone. He's been with the Metropolitan Opera here at the Lyric Opera, Chicago, Wiesbaden Opera in Germany, San Diego Opera, where he played Henry Kissinger. And with those glasses on, I can understand that. Can you still do the German?
Yeah, we can still do a little bit of the
German. Oh, that's great. A lot of fun.
A little bit of Henry.
The Seattle Opera, the Houston Grand Opera, St. Louis Symphony, Carnegie Hall.
No,
do you have any trouble finding your way to Carnegie Hall? Do you know that joke?
I do know that joke. My parents have been telling me that joke since I was a little kid.
Practice. That's how you get to Carnegie Hall.
How do you find your way back to Carnegie Hall? Practice.
That's right. Well, they're here to do the Elixir of Love. Now, I have my fun with it, but that is the basic storyline.
Yeah,
that's
exactly
how it starts out.
That's right.
A love potion, and I guess everyone feels like, is it a lack of confidence on people that they feel that they need something like this?
Absolutely, yeah. It's definitely Nemorino's lack of confidence that he really wants the girl, he really loves the girl, the girl's really interested in him, but he needs that extra push.
Yeah.
In a sense, an extra distraction, because what the doctor gives him is really bad wine. And that really bad wine, of course, goes straight to his head, especially once he's gotten his way through the second bottle of it by himself. And, yeah, from there on out, it's all fun.
Now, Ashley's character, Janetta?
Yes.
She is involved in this. Is she?
And, you know, this story could not happen without her. She is pivotal to the plot.
Yes, she is.
No. Janetta wants to be Adina. So Adina is our leading lady. And Janetta wants nothing more than to grow up to be just like her. And she is a bit of the town flirt. I think Adina is trying to correct that in her a little bit. But there are too many boys in town to choose from. But she's young. She's a sweet girl. And she does happen to find out a little bit of interesting information, which toward the end of the opera, I get my fun little moment with the ladies in the chorus. And we get to reveal some secrets on stage. So there's a bit of mystery, some happening on stage. And before we get to giggle and talk about how Nemorino has come into some money. Oh. And suddenly becomes the most eligible bachelor in town.
Strange
and it appears,
that works.
Yes, it appears as though his elixir begins working because suddenly all the ladies in town would like to get rid of their husbands or their boyfriends and make Nemorino their conquest.
I understand now. It's more of a psychological thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. Maybe a little, I don't know. Sometimes do we talk ourselves into things?
Sure. Sometimes we talk ourselves into things. Although in this case, I think Nemorino is sincere in his feelings for Adina.
Yes.
But I think definitely people get caught up in this moment of, he's rich, he's single. Well, maybe he looks better than I thought he did.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, there's a rumor that's gone on for years. The opera, it's either a tragedy or it's a comedy. This sounds like a lot of fun.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. You know, I think the Lyric Opera has done a great job in putting together a great ensemble cast in that there's just, you know, there's great artistry, there's great musicianship, but there's really great storytelling happening on stage, which you don't always get at the opera. You know, I think that that's been a lot of people's complaint in the past. Not about the Lyric Opera of Kansas City, you know, but just about the art form in general. And Donizetti wrote a great work to just have a great through line. The story really continues to move forward. You don't have these long arias that, you know, you're thinking like, okay, can we get to the point? Can we move forward now? That's not this show, and it is. It's a great musical comedy, really. And on top of that, you have wonderful, wonderful actors on stage telling the story. So I've been having a great time.
As have I. Yeah. It's been a blast.
Yeah.
Absolute blast.
That's the kind of a show that would lend itself to that.
A lot of
backstage joking around too, I would think.
Oh yeah. I mean, there's a lot of good fun happening backstage as well, and that just adds to the camaraderie on stage and in the performance. So that's
a great thing. Have you worked with some of the people in the show before? Have you two worked together before?
We have not.
No.
This is our first time working together.
But it feels like it's been years. in a good way.
This cast is definitely bonded in a good way. Let's see. Yeah, I've worked with Susanna, the Adina. She and I worked together on the same production, but in English, on the other side of the state, two summers ago in St. Louis, and that was a blast. And Norman and I, who's the Nemorino, this is our first time working together. So
Norman and I met actually 10 years ago at the Aspen Music Festival when we were both students. So it's been great to come back, and you know, I mean, he's a tremendous talent. We always knew back in the day that Norman, without question, was going places. So it's great to have the opportunity to work with him again. But he's the only member of the principal cast that I've worked with before. I'm a local gal, of course, so all of the choristers and everything. My husband is actually in the show, so it's really fun to be on stage with all of my friends, putting on a great piece of music.
You probably have a lot of friends coming as well.
My best friends from high school have never seen me perform professionally. We, of course, did theater together in high school, but they are coming with their families to see the show, which is really exciting for me, and my parents are big fans, so they're going to be here.
So this can go both ways. You can have people from high school who wouldn't have realized how you've progressed.
Right.
That happened to an actress friend of mine. They had their school reunion. I was probably the, well, she'll be mad at me. It was one of their reunions years later. And one of the friends from school, he had lived most of his life in California. But he came back to the reunion, and they all attended her play at the theater where she was performing. And, you know, he was blown away. He says, I didn't know you had done anything after our high school play. Just blown away. But that happens sometimes. They don't realize these things.
Yeah, and I think this production of The Elixir of Love is, our director has said that The Elixir of Love is sort of like the grandfather of The Music Man. He was looking, when he conceptualized this production with the designers, he was looking for a way to just bring it more to home for American audiences. Mm-hmm. So this is set in Anywhere Town, USA, in that it's good old Americana during World War I era, whereas the original show is placed loosely in Italy, you know, back in the 1800s when mm-hmm. it was written. And so this is a bit more relatable to our American audiences. Actually, it's really funny. He was saying that when he did this production in the past, I won't name the opera house, but he said he was doing it with all European principals, and that it was really hard for them to get a sense of why they were doing this production in this way, because they just didn't have those American sensibilities. But he, as I said, that he sees The Elixir of Love as a grandfather for The Music Man. You'll see a lot of similarities between this production and, if you're a musical theater fan, of The Music Man. And to tie my girlfriends that are coming, we did The Music Man together. It'll be even more.
Oh, that's
fun
a great parallel, isn't
yeah.
it? Then The Music Man, well, if you've never seen it, I'm going to ruin it for you. But he tries to get them. They are left with the impression that they, if they only would buy these instruments from their kids, they would be a wonderful, wonderful band.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it takes more than just great instruments to do this.
It takes the think system, right?
The think system, sure exactly.
And practice, in The Elixir practice, of practice. Love, I guess the elixir.
Yes.
It's kind of a substitute for that. So that is a wonderful parallel.
Yeah.
So well thought out.
Yes.
I assume The Elixir of Love was probably written long before the
yes.
music.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. 1832?
Yeah.
Am I reading that right?
That would be quite a while.
Yeah. Yeah. So it is a very, very easy tie-in, I think, for this production. And nothing feels like we're reaching artistically. At least I don't feel that
no,
way.
No, I agree completely. It makes total sense. And bringing it into this period makes absolute sense in terms of all the characters, all the storytelling, all of it just lines right up.
Now, from what you told me earlier, this is a Italian sung version?
That's correct.
Uh-huh. So you mentioned doing an English version of the same
thing. That's correct.
Thing,
so yeah. We did an English version of the exact same production in St. Louis in 2014.
Now, don't let that scare you away, anyone.
No.
The lyrics are written on the back of the chairs.
That's correct.
And
you can
see or not. Some people turn it off. They don't want to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
They would prefer to hear it as it is and follow the progress of the story in the program, which you can.
Mm-hmm.
It always explains very thoroughly what is going on in each scene.
Absolutely.
Each half and pretty much dominates the story. But I have found that you opera singers, you're pretty good actors and actresses on your own. It's, mm-hmm. You don't necessarily have to understand all the words to follow the storyline.
Yes.
I mean, it's our job to tell the story, and hopefully, regardless of the language, we're able to communicate to the audience through voice and sound and gesture and using the text as best we can, but also letting the audience be free enough to experience an entire idea.
Oh, sure, yeah. If something is too good to be true, chances are it probably is too good to be true.
Yes.
It really is. We're talking with Ashley Weed and Patrick Cartizzi.
Carfizzi. Mm-hmm.
That is an F, I guess.
That is an F, that's right.
That was given to me as a T.
Ooh,
actually, Carfizzi? No. In the lyric opera production of The Elixir of Love, this is the basic plot line that, well, blame the internet. A quack doctor sells a love potion to unsuspecting people.
Yes.
That's just a boy, a girl, and a love potion. Doesn't necessarily work out that way, though, does it? Or does it? Don't give away anything important.
No. I think it works out to the to the best of all involved. You know, the quack doctor, yes. For once in his life, the quack doctor does not get rid out of town on a rail. And the boy gets the girl, and the girl gets the boy, and they're both very happy. And the town has maybe taken a step in an interesting direction in terms of it just saying, all right, there are other people in the world. There is this quack doctor who comes to town, and some of them trust him, some of them don't. But yeah, I think all in all, in the end, everyone's pretty happy at the end of this one.
Sounds like a lot of fun. The show opens on Saturday, March the 12th. Oh, it's coming up for you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I hope you're getting ready.
We're going to have fun.
Saturday the 12th at 7:30 p.m. Performances then continue Wednesday the 16th at 7:30, Friday the 18th at 7:30, and concludes with a Sunday afternoon matinee on the 20th of March at 2 o'clock p.m. at the Muriel Kaufman Theater, part of the Kaufman Center for the Performing Arts. Mm-hmm. Here in Kansas City, the Lyric Opera, the Elixir of Love, kcopera.org. That's the you can make your arrangements online as well. We're speaking with Ashley Wheat and Patrick Carfizi in the show. Some of the people you work with in the show. You've mentioned a few people. Is there any others you'd like to talk about?
Well, I will say that the Lyric Opera of Kansas City has done a great job with putting together a wonderful group of people to help support them in their chorus. Mark Farrell is our chorus master. Has been for, gosh, I don't know how many years, many, that he's been with the Lyric Opera of Kansas City. And so he's been at the auditions and has helped orchestrate putting this ensemble together. But it's a lot of the students at UMKC and KU, actually. We have these two great music programs that are feeder schools into the Lyric Opera of Kansas City chorus. So it's, which I think, I don't know, Patrick, you can interject here whether or not you think that I'm wrong in that it's untraditionally quite young chorus.
I would agree. Yeah. It's a younger chorus, definitely. And that's fantastic. There's lots of energy. They sound glorious, and there's lots of wonderful dramatic energy, and everyone is very willing to play, which is spectacular. That's really adds to the atmosphere of the town and the atmosphere that we're creating in the show.
Yes. Yeah, and again, for me, just being able—I mean, it's your second time here, Patrick. Mm-hmm. So it's you know a lot of the choristers as well. Mm-hmm. But for me, being able to be on stage again with all of my friends to get to play every day with them is a lot of fun. And I'm doing it with my husband. So
which role does he play in the show?
He's in the chorus in the show. So and we don't really have any I mean, we're on stage all the time together, but we don't, you know, have any interaction on stage. But it's still fun that we get to go to work every day together and have a little bit of stolen time when we're in between rehearsals too. We have a little boy, so having that one-on-one time together is pretty rare for us. So it's nice.
I didn't give the number earlier because I didn't have it here, but I looked it up online as they were speaking, and it's 816-471-7344. You can make your arrangements that way as well. Talking about the Elixir of Love, part of the Lyric Opera schedule. The music, Kansas City Symphony,
is
playing for you.
Who play absolutely beautifully. I remember them very fondly from the L'Italiano in Algeri that I sang here back in 2014. And this time we have Maestro Christopher Allen, a wonderful young maestro, who will be leading the performance. He's fantastic and has been a joy to work with. Jim Robinson, our director, is just wonderful. Just spectacular.
Amazing.
Really spectacular. It's been a great experience being here. It always is, and it's no different this time. It's really been very special. Full of lots of fun, and
Tell me about the costuming. But go ahead with your thoughts.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, and you get to do, you already know that you're going to be able to do Dulcamara again, isn't that right?
Thankfully, yeah. Yeah, I have a few more Dulcamaras coming up this year. I do one in Germany, in Wiesbaden.
Oh, wow.
And then I do one later in the year in Houston for the opening of their season. So he's already an old friend, and he's going to continue to become an older friend, one might say.
Patrick told me something that I really enjoyed the other day, that he was saying that, you know, as a bass, you come into this career and you're very young, and all of the characters are written quite old. I'll let you finish.
Yeah, no, it's very true. I mean, I'll turn 42 in a month, and I've been singing, thankfully, for nearly 20 years.
Wow.
and have done a lot of great variety of roles. But the core repertoire for me starts becoming age appropriate now. I mean, it's been, depending on the production, there have been other times that it's been, okay, we make a decision for it to be appropriate, even though I'm 35 or whatever. But now, finally, you know, the 42 and 45 and 50, playing a 50-year-old man isn't so far away. I guess I could have mixed feelings about that, but I don't.
Time just catches up with you.
I have no complaints.
You turn around and, another 10 years has gone by. If you're enjoying yourself, It's great.
Exactly right.
It really is.
Exactly right.
You just count your blessings and go on from there.
Exactly right.
And it's very important, folks, to count those blessings.
Indeed. Indeed.
Many, many things that you need to know. It sounds like you're having a fun time. I was going to ask about the costumes. They're always gorgeous at the Lyric.
They're so fun for this show, too. We actually got to see everybody in costume for the first time yesterday. Mm-hmm. So if you had asked us this question the day before, I would have said, I don't know. Mary Traylor in Kansas City costume it's bringing a production that already existed to life. So they are not designing these costumes. I don't remember the name of the original costume designer.
I don't remember either.
Unfortunately, he has passed, but he was a Broadway costume designer for a number of years, but he's no longer with us. I apologize for forgetting your name. The costumes, again, it really does. As I said, I did The Music Man in high school, and it really does feel like we are just good old Americana. You know, you've got the folks that are farmers, but they've put on their nice shoes with their overalls to come to town. And then you've got, you've got your little bit more upper crust. We've got the sheriff that's in his full suit with the star and his big, you know, almost 10-gallon hat.
It's an 8.5-gallon hat.
And we have some kids involved in this production as well that are part of the education and outreach development program at the Lyric Opera of Kansas City, which is a great program that kids in the area get involved in, and then some of them do find themselves onto the main stage, which I can't even imagine. I grew up in Seattle, and we didn't have an education program like that with Seattle Opera. I would have loved that, and the Lyric Opera of Kansas City has just done such a great job in reaching out to the youth in this community. But so we've got some little girls playing boys on stage, and the costumes are just really lush and very vibrantly colorful. But you know, good old fashioned, good values, good morals. You know, it just harkens back to a time that was more innocent.
Yes, was it really that innocent?
Well, there's the question.
That's the perception.
Yeah. There's a little bit too much elixir drank on stage, I suppose, for it to be too innocent.
Yeah, we don't have much time, but I do want to ask about the puppets, especially the trip to China.
Oh, yeah. Dubai.
Dubai. Oh, that's right. Dubai.
Yeah. So I perform in, you said crossover artists. I perform in musical theater and opera and puppetry here in Kansas City. And Stone Lion is another one of those great, surprise of an arts program here in Kansas City. We have, I think, 4 professional puppet companies. Anytime that I tell people that I work with puppets, they say, "Oh, Paul Messner," and I'm like, "No," but because we don't have a theater home, in that all of Heather's, all of Stone Lion's productions travel, so we go into schools and perform them, or community centers, or what have you, and everything is grant funded by the Missouri Arts Council or Kansas City Young Audiences. Things like that. And Heather, actually, she builds all of her puppets in-house. Most of them are made from recycled, repurposed materials. That's part of her mission at Stone Lion. And also, most of her shows do have a, earth-friendly message for the children that we are then, going out and performing for. When I went to Dubai, it was through a company called Saltimbanco Italiano. It's just really funny. They are Italian and Polish, this company that are located in the UAE, and they bring in different arts organizations from all over the world. And this particular, the Dubai Summer Surprises International Puppet Festival that we did the first year. And Heather has been back to Dubai several times to work with Saltimbanco. It was us and the Austrian State Puppet Theater, which was, they brought in their huge bridge marionette stage all the way from Austria you know, in which they did some a big Mozart's Night music, you know, beautiful ballet, you know, sort of graceful ballet puppet sort of thing. We had the Cairo National Puppet Theater. People were there from Cambodia, from Italy. And then there was us, Stone Lion, there from representing the United States. And we did a little cabaret marionette show, which with cabaret marionettes is when you're actually walking out with the puppets. You're not hidden behind a proscenium or behind the stage. And we did our cabaret marionette puppet show, which you see at Stone Lion do a lot of. Mm-hmm. And it was called The Toy Box, and it's just a fun thing for the kids. And actually, it was received very, very well. And Heather got lots of notoriety and work out of that Summer Surprises Festival that we did. So it was an incredible experience.
Puppetry can be an international language because it really doesn't require a language.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
And children who have problems that can't be communicated with any other way, they use puppets often.
It's amazing that when you are out there with a puppet in your hands that the children are not looking at you. You know, you're not trying to be the focus anyway. You want that puppet to be communicating for you. Mm-hmm. But they are looking in the eyes of that puppet even though the operator is standing right there manipulating it. Mm-hmm. So for me as an artist, I just knew that I wanted to take under my wing as many different art forms as I could to develop my craft. And I love working with marionettes in particular. I've done rod puppets and hand puppets, you know, that talk as well at Stone Lion, but marionettes are my favorite. And it's incredible to see the connection that especially children have with those puppets.
Yeah, well, thank you for being with us here today. You can see Ashley and Patrick in The Elixir of Love, a production of the Lyric Opera of Kansas City. Shows start on Saturday, March the 12th at 7:30, Wednesday the 16th at 7:30, Friday the 18th at 7:30, and a matinee on Sunday the 20th at 2 o'clock p.m. at the Muriel Kaufman Theater. The number to call for more information is 816-471-7344 or online at kcopera.org. You can see a calendar, all of that, to see if you can see The Elixir of Love, which sounds like a fun show to do. A lot of fun in the background. Thanks so much for being with us, Ashley Wheat and Patrick Carfizi. Thank you for coming on with us on the Arts Magazine show today.
Thanks so much.
We all need to have fun. It sounds like a fun show as well. Thanks so much. The Jazz Insider is next. He's going to be playing some great jazz. I peeked over his shoulder. He has some great jazz coming up. Jazz from 1 to 3 and then the blues from 3 to 6 right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that cross in the road, I'm Michael Hogue. We'll see you next time.